You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Deborah Zalotsky. Deborah, thanks so much for being with me today.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Deborah, we're going to talk about your show, Genealogies, at Catherine Markle, which I had the pleasure of just seeing. And I want to talk to you about all of these works, which are really beautiful and kind of luminous. You know, there's something that's hard to see online that is so present with these, which is that the colors themselves create almost vibrations in some cases, right? I mean, to start, perhaps we're talking about that. There's such a difference between seeing things online and in person, which is why you have to own a painting, not just look at it online. What are your thoughts on that, right? Because the colors, just especially the colors you're using, are not really reproducible the way they are when you're seeing them in person, right?
Well, thanks for your kind words about them. Yeah, I think it's quite different to see a painting in real life, IRL, versus seeing the image online. I mean, just in a really broad way, I've always feel that someone looking at my work online is seeing a kind of, you know, like a very graphic image, a very graphic painting. But when you see them in real life, they actually have a lot of shifting color and a lot of sort of drips and smears and discolorations. And then also all that trompe l'oeil that I add in, the shadows and maybe descriptive passages, they're kind of lost when you look quickly, you know, at an image on Instagram. So I feel like there's a slowness that can happen in when looking at them actually, that just can't happen. I mean, maybe it can't happen with anybody's work, but I feel like, you know, I'm intentionally trying to mix visual languages, and I'm intentionally trying to create kind of unexpected relationships between those more descriptive parts and those broader shapes of color. And it's just a really big part of what I intend to have happen in the pictorial space that's just missed with an image.
With an image online, right. Yeah, that's so important to think about. I mean, especially with the trompe l'oeil aspects, which, yeah, let's get into that first, because these are, of course, abstractions and often geometric. But then the trompe l'oeil aspect comes in a really unusual way, right? It's sometimes, to me, it's humorous, but it's, of course, also has a, well, that's how it strikes me anyway, but also has a very specific element of composition, right? It's kind of pulling things around in certain ways. I mean, there's one with ropes, and it almost strikes me as kind of ropes and pulleys, like it's pulling you in and out, or almost colors up and down. How do you approach the trompe l'oeil? Let's talk about that.
Well, my background is, when I first started painting, I really was interested in more representational work, and I kind of taught myself how to paint. I had art history background, not a studio background. And so that was really the first thing that I was interested in. And eventually that led me to, you know, looking a lot of art historical references and appropriating bits and pieces from those paintings and feeling like I could be schooled by, you know, like amazing artists from the 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th century. And so I think I have a real reverence for that kind of language, a sense of space, a sense of illusion. You know, it's still a thrill to see light, a sense of light or a sense of form in a pictorial space. And even if I'm not interested in creating a whole realist, you know, singular kind of situation, interrupting the abstraction with this other kind of presence or sensibility or language creates for me, something that's more hybrid, more suggestive of holding together very disparate things, which I'm interested in. I also, you know, oftentimes just the way they're painted might seem, I mean, I'd love them to be seen. They may not always be seen, but like in this more historical way, like something from another era. And the idea that there can be these multiple things happening makes, I hope, the paintings more of a situation, makes things seem less, you know, I guess I'm interested too in like, you know, this idea that our dominant culture is so binary and it's so restrictive. And I'm much more interested in the multiplicity of things, the a little bit of the chaos, a little bit of the complexity of it. And the trompe l'oeil is often used in my paintings too, like you were saying, like tying things together, showing how there's something that is weaving between or anchoring or propping up or supporting. And so it is, I do intend for it to be humorous, so I'm glad that you picked up on that. I think that my paintings could be this sort of weird combination of sort of sad and humorous. And the trompe l'oeil maybe adds a bit to that.
Well, the one I was thinking of was not a lion, but a constellation. And what strikes me about that is it's almost kind of like the trompe l'oeil is like that, right? It's like this, wowing trick a little bit, right? The viewer's kind of like, what's happening here? Because initially we see it as something else, right? That's why it's called trompe l'oeil. But in this one, not a lion, but a constellation, it also, since it does seem like something's being tied together, at least in my case, and the way these cords go into the perceived holes there, it's almost as though the viewer can reconstruct what's happening behind the canvas, right? As if this is one line going into one hole, out the other. And I'm not sure if that's how you intended it, but it almost seems that way because they don't all go into the hole the same way. It seems that there's a certain amount of tension coming from behind the painting, right? Which, again, is like this sort of neurological magic trick or something.
Yeah, I mean, I did want that chord to read not as three separate pieces that were maybe tied behind that thing. Although, there's nothing wrong with that interpretation. I was thinking about something continuous, and that was sort of holding those stripes together. So those stripes would be, you know, on the one hand, they're super flat. On the other hand, the chords are suggesting that, no, they're kind of maybe fragile or need extra help or are just sort of penetrated through by this other, whatever this other thing is, this other sensibility, this other aspect, this other voice that's also coexisting. So that flatness and the dimensionality coexisting in one space to me is really exciting, rather than just one or the other.
Yeah, and that's exciting to me too. Yeah, I'm sorry, go on though.
Well, I was going to say, and then like at the bottom of that painting, there's like a little dimensional area where the stripes become more volumetric, as if they're kind of a plushy, cushiony area of them. They're curved, and then they have some shadow information. So it's just like another element of one thing becoming something else. I mean, that is one thing becoming something else. The chords with the stripes are maybe two distinct things, coexisting, interacting in conversation with one another.
And to talk about another work in the show, there's so many that I'd like to talk about, but Tragedy Plus Time. It's an interesting title as well. But this one, of course, is really complicated in terms of the forms in here, the patterns, the geometries, but also there's an aspect to it, like what you just said about the bottom of those shapes turning into this kind of plushy, like three-dimensional forms. That's happening here too. And I know in some of your writing and reading about this show, you talk about colors kind of misbehaving. And that's what's, you know, adds so much depth to this, I think, to these works, is that there seems to be underpaintings, there seems to be, or overpaintings, you know, that this isn't geometric work like Neo Geo or lots of other geometric painters. There's so much color coming through what looks like a somewhat rigid structure, right? So again, talking about tragedy plus time, that seems to be happening a lot here in terms of just the palette, but also the underpaintings, and then the illusion of things coming forward as a kind of shape out into the viewer's space.
That's Figgis. Well, thanks. The idea of things getting woven together, pushing and pulling in space, the kind of, I mean, just as a painter, there's a lot of pleasure in kind of fancifully trying to figure out where things are, how to sort of, I don't know if the right word is problem solve, but like if this is going across, where could it go? And where would it hit behind here? And how could it be continuous? Kind of one thing steps up and moves to the next. And it becomes kind of a puzzle to figure out. Oftentimes there's a few things that I feel like, okay, this does need to stay there. But in the course of the painting, things change really radically. And that painting in particular, I had it working in a certain kind of way, and I thought I was done. I think this happens with a lot of people, but you know, I thought I was done, and then I thought I could just sort of rescue one area and make a slight adjustment, but that had this whole cascading effect that I ended up, you know, repainting and repositioning, you know, like half the painting. I do a lot of compositional studies with Procreate, which is kind of a cheapy painting app. And the compositional studies take me a really long time. They just take me longer and longer. And I basically just sort of start and keep adding and changing and adding and changing hundreds of times until I get to something that I think is going to work. Of course, it's an app, so even the color I might put in as a sort of notation, I'm never going to be able to get with paint because of the difference between the screen and reality. So the studies that I have, I start with, and sometimes if I'm super lucky, I can stick with it, but more often than not, I have to make lots of adjustments with the structure. And then, of course, the color is also adjusted and changed.
And then in some of these, right, that transition from Procreate to painting obviously is a big one, because there's so many incredibly painterly things happening in here, right? Like with the equivalent of drips or drops, not so much drips, but something that almost looks like a smudge, something that looks like it's bleeding through. That's something, of course, that can happen in Procreate, I imagine, and it's something that's only the language of paint on canvas, right? And it seems to me, I mean, I'd like to hear about this process from you, but that's not something that can be as easily predicted or drawn or planned, is it?
No. And I, you know, the compositional studies are, they're mostly structural with some hopeful ideas about color. They're not the painting. Because you know, painting has its own qualities and leads me to a surface that would be quite different than like the clean kind of graphic aspect of a composition study in Procreate. I used to paint, you know, before Procreate, I used to do lots of, just in graphite, little compositional studies with no color. And when I got to a point where one seemed like likely, like the structure was likely going to work, then I would start the painting. And that was a really long process of painting and repainting and repainting and repainting. And so, you know, I'm really interested in history, and you know, a lot of my interest is in response to ideas about history. And so this was literally like the history had to be built up on the surface. So in a lot of ways, those paintings made sense, you know, my process. But it was so, it took so long that once I tried Procreate, and I realized that the long process is in Procreate, and there's like a medium process on the painting now. And it just allows me to, you know, be a little more strategic about getting the paintings done. But I like the idea that, you know, I'm never locked in. I'm always being responsive to the painting itself. And there's always surprises of where something might go. And I might even go so far as to say the paintings that take me the longest are probably the stronger paintings, because I've stuck with them until they work in the way that, you know, I want them to work, and it was hard won.
Thanks for sharing that. Yeah, that makes sense. And to talk about one more, Ghost Lines 3. And before we get into this, the titles here, right? Ghost Lines 3, Tragedy Plus Time. They almost feel like they have a narrative. Is there something like a narrative behind these, a story or something personal, or does that not enter into the titles of these?
Oh, yeah, definitely enters. I mean, all of them are about some kind of sense of maybe the complexity of history, the complexity of time. I think they also give a kind of humble or maybe humorous voice to something that might seem more, you know, abstraction maybe doesn't always seem warm. And I think the titles can warm things and make them more autobiographical, which I think these are. So all of them, yeah, are about being connected to the past and the way the past kind of is ever present in, you know, in the present. So Tragedy Plus Time is comedy, or
Ghost Lines.
I need you now, like I need you then. Never repeats but rhymes. Those kinds of things. So I'm interested in the accidents and kind of coincidences in history and, you know, how I experience them, but then maybe from a broader notion too. And it ties together to this sort of preponderance of stripes in my work, the idea of patterns that can be just really personal, or neural pathways, but also bigger patterns of that are more collective histories and repetitions and interruptions to those repeated patterns. That's all really interesting to me.
So in the painting Ghost Lines 3, you know, this has really interesting patterns and pathways in it, right? As in compositionally, we stay within the canvas, yet move all around it, behind and seemingly through it, almost like there's an exit in some cases where there's ovals in it. This one is so interesting because it feels maze-like to me, but also is interrupted by other aspects of it that are not geometric, like drips, like what feel like ghost paintings in the background. In this particular one, I'd love to hear a little bit more about the compositional intention here, perhaps, because it's really exciting to look at, not just the way you're combining colors, like these sort of lavender colors with blacks, but also spatially, something really unusual is happening here, right? These lines take us further back in the pictorial plane, or bring us forward. There's something happening here that's about traveling, it seems to me, along a line.
Thank you. This painting is really has a connection to a group of paintings that I did that are, you know, I think of them as being genealogical trees, family trees. You know, if you can visualize lots of offshoots and the kind of asymmetry of a family tree. I also did a whole series of what I called couples, where they were sort of like two very distinct things that were connected and fluid, but also very different and kind of coming together. And so this is sort of a combination of the two, and thinking about, you know, sort of the accident of two people meeting, my parents or some much more past generation, and the happenstance of that, the mismatch of that, and yet the flow of time and the, you know, they're intricately bound together, even though they're quite different. Black and white stripes, and green and lavender and white stripes and orange, and these things come together. So kind of the ghosts of all of our paths. And again, like more autobiographically, but also thinking of it like more broadly. The couple series that I did was really inspired by my parents, who I think of as being totally mismatched, and yet extremely loyal to one another. That was what launched that series, and I think this is still a part of it.
Thanks for sharing that. It's so exciting to go through this with you. Of course, there's links here so listeners can find out more. And you're also having a show at Mackenzie at the exact same time. Is that correct?
Yeah, there's another exhibition called The Light Gets In, and it's at Mackenzie Fine Art down in Lower East Side. And the dates for both shows are pretty much the same.
Well, thanks so much for talking to me about all of this. I want to ask you one more question before we go. What are you reading at the moment?
I'm reading Susan Choi's Flashlight, which is definitely about how the past interrupts the present and makes things very, very complex.
Thanks so much. I want to just thank you, Deborah, for talking with me today, for making this beautiful body of work. And again, listeners have links here so they can learn more and look into and hopefully see the show at Catherine Markle. Again, thanks so much, Deborah, for your time today.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.